Because you're not going to get, even though the Nair is very significant, because the Gemara calls Sukkot, and those Sukkot, Nair Hashem Nishmasod and Chavis Kochad V'Botzen, we should use a Nair for all kinds of reasons, but a Nair cannot get under the bed and can't get under areas that are obviously not so accessible. That's why we use a flashlight to accompany it. Still, you should do Bedika. I mean, as long as you put Chametz in there at one time, you should, we're not relying on the cleaning that we did. That's what I'm saying. But it could be a obviously not the same kind of intense bedikah that you would do normally. It doesn't have to be because it's already cleaned for Pesach.
I saw this print.
It doesn't mean anything.
What does that mean? My husband said, we're not using them. I just want to know what it is.
Because when they write Rabbanut Mahadim without giving a specific name,
right,
or they write Rabbanut or Shit Yisrael, which is also. Usually, when something is denatured, it's no longer fit for human consumption. That's why it's denatured. That's what they do. But most of that is not drinkable, as far as I know. I don't see that alcohol is at all roi lachila. It means because either they added all types of solvents or toxicants, or perhaps they sometimes add these bitter tasting kind of toxicants to these items. Sometimes they add vinegar to the alcohol, all types of things, all types of additives. But my understanding of denatured is that by definition, it means that it's not going to be drinkable. Makes it essentially renders it unthinkable. That's what denatured means. I'll bring it. I'll try to discuss it. This will end up here being longer, but okay, if you don't mind. Maybe I should begin. So, hope you all can hear me. Yeah. Okay. Shikah. Tonight I'm going to divide essentially into three segments. There's no way this is going to be comprehensive, so I'm just trying to essentially more or less articulate general guidelines for, number one, food and products on Pesach. I'll begin with that. And then I'll enter into the world of kidneys and quinoa and gibrux. And then hopefully I'll get to this year, Erev Pesach, that falls out on Shabbos. So really each of these areas would require an inordinate amount of time. So we're speaking in a very general kind of way. And I'll just begin by pointing out something which again is not novel to any of you sitting here. As I mentioned in the last year, you're all Baruch Hashem seasoned veterans. And so when we look into food products on Pesach, there are really two types of food products. There's processed food and there's unprocessed food. Usually unprocessed food doesn't really have any issues. We're talking about whether it's vegetables or fresh fruit, things of that sort. And generally speaking, unless we're dealing with raw grain or flour, we're not talking about any issue that has any halachic implications regarding Pesach. Processed foods is where things actually require a certain degree of vigilance, and that's basically the issue that often comes to the fore on Pesach, which is why there's a lot of areas where people would be machmir. When I say unprocessed food, I'm talking about, aside from kidneys, again, I want to make sure that that's clear. Aside from kidneys, which Ashkenazim are very machmir about, I'm talking about corn, rice, beans, and all types of legumes. Which again, we're not discussing that. We're talking about simply fresh fruit and vegetables. And they include, there's a rather lengthy variety of them. I actually have a lengthy list, but I'm not going to go through all the lists. You can more or less on your own come to the proper conclusions, which is included, which is not included. Now, the issue of dairy products specifically relating to milk, again, normally milk is pasteurized and normally milk also requires the heifer. But in terms of, I remember when I lived in Chutz Aretz, so the practice was, at least in my family, my mother, La Shalom, And my wife, Tibad L'chaim Arukim, so we only purchased milk before Pesach. We never bought milk on Pesach itself. The issue is that the cows are being given chamstig of feed, and that's the issue. That's called the issue in halacha called zebezeh goreng. You have a number of different factors responsible for the milk that comes at the end of this process. And the question whether that's permissible or not permissible. So those who are machmir to buy generally prior to Pesach here in Eretz Yisrael, it's not really an issue. So that also is something that we don't have to be concerned about. And now just going on with a number of just very simple items that are well known to us. And these are now questions that people have asked me in the last several weeks. Eggs. Eggs do not require any hashgacha for Pesach. People have asked me about the stamp that's placed on the egg. I don't see any issue whatsoever with that stamp that's placed on the egg, with the ink that's placed on the egg. And generally speaking, it's really not fit for human consumption, b'chlal. And it may even be, God forbid, chachon l'tzlan may even have some elements of sakon if one actually. So generally people are going to wash it and make sure that if they can. But these are not items that necessarily require any kind of special hashgacha. When we just continue on the list that I'm referring to, that I have in front of me, there are also questions that are raised regarding items such as, for example, spices. Now, spices already, that would seem that there should be no difference between any spice and any other, I would imagine, a natural food or vegetable that doesn't require a hechsher. But here, sometimes you have to be concerned. I'm talking about, again, non-kidney spices. We're not discussing anything having to do with kidneys. Kidneys is Ashkenazim, not acceptable and not utilized. But we're talking about all types of different spices, whether it's cloves or cinnamon or ginger, vanilla, pepper, anything that's done to produce a fragrance. And it would seem, as I said, that offhand it should not require any kind of hashgacha. The only question is whether there are items that are added to the spices. Sometimes they add different types of anti-caking or anti-dusting agents. I've read extensively about this. And sometimes it can be traces of kidneys and perhaps even chametz introducing a spice. And as a result, one has to be make sure that the spice actually has hashgacha regarding Pesach. Someone asked me today again about the water from the Kinneret. Seems to be the favorite topic in this country every single year. I'm asked about that. Some hunk of bread that someone throws into the Kinneret. It's not an issue whatsoever.
No, it's not.
What the what possible problem that could be over here. Water is filtered to a large extent, and therefore that's not considered to be an issue. Someone asked me about baby foods. Again, they have baby foods like kosher of Pesach, and we'll see in a little while that here, if you have a baby food, which may have kidneys, and that for young children, assuming that baby formulas often contain kidneys, you take a look at drugs, you see it very clearly, but if it's needed by the child, there's no question they're allowed to use it. Kidneys is not something which is, we're not talking about a rabbinic or a Torah kind of prohibition. We'll discuss it in a little while, as I said. But often the baby formulas contain kidneys, but if needed by a young child, there's no question, there's nothing comparable to it, they're allowed to use it without any subject whatsoever. Beyond that, just again, on my list that I have in front of me that I wrote down for myself, there's someone asked me, again, these are questions that have been asked of me in the last several weeks, and so that's why I'm discussing them. We'll talk about different types of coffees. Now, coffee in general is essentially, what is it? The essential ingredient is ground coffee beans. And but the problem is, in the processing of the coffee, there can be issues that come to the fore, especially during the roasting. And there are different items that are often added in coffees. There are flavored coffees that are problematic, that may have even chametz elements actually in them that one has to be careful about. There are decaffeinated coffees that have chametz ingredients in them. I actually today went looking. I happen to be a big coffee maven. It's one of my favorite drinks. But whatever the case is, you can have actually there in flavored coffee. Certainly, I actually saw it today. One coffee which clearly had chametz ingredients, another one clearly had kidneys. And therefore, one has to make sure that the coffee one uses should have a hashgacha. Someone asked me about honey. So again, one would have thought that pure natural honey is a thick, syrupy kind of substance produced by bees from the nectar of flowers, thought in honeycombs? What possible issue could there be? And even though it's a davar hayotzei min hatameh, honey is an exception. The Gemara has a pasuk that honey is permissible, even though it came out of honeybees that are non-kosher insects from a halachic standpoint. But however, you often find in honey, you find corn syrups and other agents that are added. And that's why honey also requires a hechsher of Pesach. Okay, I am just going to, in the course of talking about, someone asked me today about sodas and the like. And I imagine all of you are aware of what is at least happening here in Eretz Yisrael. During the course of the year, there's a certain soda that's under Hashgacha, and then the Hashgacha is taken away, and it goes to another Hashgacha organization that takes it over. And the issue is aspartame, which is, again, a sweetener that's used in these kinds of sodas. And there was, a discussion regarding the nature of that particular item. It's under a very good Hashgacha. It's normally under what's considered to be also one of the best Hashgachas in Eretz Yisrael. But as I said, this is the subject of a lot of discussion. I want to mention also, someone spoke to me today about this as well, regarding vinegar. So vinegar is used, of course, as a kind of condiment. It's also used as a preservative. And usually it's an ingredient that's used in ketchup, dips, and other condiments. They showed me a few days ago, ketchup that's kosher to Pesach. I have never in my entire life did I see ketchup that was kosher to Pesach. It was a special run made, and we checked into it from London, from the KF, which is a very good Hashgacha, and it was made in Spain. And usually ketchup either has vinegar, or ketchup has corn syrup, ketchup has all kinds of other additives, other kinds of ingredients. And this ketchup seems to be on the, Baruch Hashem, on the up and up completely. And again, as I said, I don't know of any other ketchup, as far as I know, in terms of Pesach is concerned. Since it was, you asked earlier about alcohol, so maybe I'll just, one or two comments regarding alcohol. Of course, grain alcohol, or what's known as ethyl alcohol, that's actually one of the products of the Chamesh Saminim. And most distilled liquors that I know, most alcoholic drinks are essentially derived from grain. And I'm talking about all types of, don't have mumchis in this area. I'm again a teetotaler in every respect, but I'm talking about whether it's gin or bourbon or all types of vodkas, all types of whiskeys. And there's the question that the poskim have regarding the status of ethyl alcohol on Pesach. Grain alcohol is certainly a form of chametz, even though it's not chametz gomer. It's what's called tarovus chametz. Tarovus chametz means you have a mixture, a chametz mixture, as opposed to having chametz actually in a direct kind of way. Ethyl alcohol is made by what they do is, from what I understand, they distill what's called a mash, M-A-S-H, which is a mixture of crushed or ground meal derived from grain, typically of the chametz saminim, that can become chametz, the five types of grain. And when you allow it to stand, it begins to ferment, and that produces a combination of alcohol. And they have distillation where they separate the alcohol from all the other impurities that are found there. It was good to take organic chemistry just for that alone. So this is essentially how alcoholic beverages are produced. Now, the question is whether, what's the status of grain alcohols for sure? It's a chametz product, but many say it's tarovus chametz, not pure chametz, because again, it's not solely from grain. It's a combination of many, many different elements actually that come together. But again, there are poskim, and generally we sell. That seems to be the practice of Rabbonim, who sell actually these spirits through a mechira. Again, speaking about other types of alcohols that are used in non-food industry, and there are different types of alcohol. We just spoke about ethyl alcohol. There's something called methanol, the methyl alcohol, which is usually distilled from wood or by some other synthetic process. And there's a isopropyl alcohol, it's based on petroleum-based. So as I said, in terms of the ethanol, that's found in cosmetics. It's found in many, many household items, whether you have perfumes or you have all these deodorants, all these solvents, all these cleaners. Many of them have ethanol, and they're not derived from edible sources. You can't really eat it. It's not something which is edible. And so in most of these cases, you really don't have an issue when it comes to Pesach. Now, I mentioned earlier, to mention that denatured alcohol essentially is what they do is they attempt to degrade it. They attempted to render the alcohol undrinkable. And they're able to do so, in effect, by adding all kinds of toxicants and adding all kinds of solvents to the alcohol. They basically add many additives, and often they add vinegar to the alcohol, but essentially it makes it unusable. It can't be usable as a liquor, can't be used as a drink. It's just simply not drinkable. And so therefore, this is what is done often, denatured alcohol. Now, there's different types of denatured alcohol. The question is whether it's considered to be chametz or not considered to be chametz. Again, the general rule of thumb is, and this is the rule of thumb you have to try to remember, whatever is nifsal me'achilas kela, whatever cannot be eaten by a dog, cannot be consumed by a dog, is not subject to chametz restrictions. I'm giving you the obvious examples are all types of inks, all types of soaps, all types of detergents, all types of polishes. They're not chametz because they're totally unfit for consumption. No human being is going to eat them. And that's the principle of nifsal me'achilas kela. And seemingly that should apply as well to even chametz-based alcohols if they're denatured. Once they're denatured, they're not drinkable. They're not capable of being consumed. And therefore, it sometimes happens that perhaps they can be reconstituted. This is the subject of a famous tshuva of Hagoyin HaMashiach Feinstein, that's how he speaks about people. He lived in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And there were people on the Bowery, which is an area of the Lower East Side, that they actually drank all these types of things. He's talking about even liquid cosmetics or toiletries that contained actually denatured ethyl alcohol, and somehow they can be reconstituted, they can be restored to their edible form, and because it has the potential of being eaten, of being reconstituted and reformed, and therefore perhaps drinkable, so Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the tshuva, the very famous tshuva, that perhaps one should be machmir regarding this matter. But again, as I said, I don't believe that's the case today, from what I heard, from what I understand, that there's even a lot of, in many of these items, there's a lot of poison. And though it actually may be very dangerous for one to go ahead and ingest any of these items. And the same thing, again, applies to medications. And here, even though I want to give a general rule of thumb that you should try to utilize, which I think is the best rule of thumb that can be used, namely, that whatever goes into one's mouth, that's problematic. One should try to avoid anything that goes into your mouth. I'm talking about all these chewable tablets and the like, and whether they are, I think they call them sublingual medications. They're actually placed under the tongue. Often they're flavored, and often that is a problem, unquestionably. They may have chametz flavoring in them, but in general, liquid medications, they are problematic. Anything that's going to be ingested, that's going to be placed into one's mouth, one has to be careful regarding that matter. Now, the question is what happens regarding vitamins? And so generally people are machmir to try to get vitamins out of kosher to Pesach if they possibly can, and even all these other enzyme supplements that people utilize on an ongoing kind of basis. But as I said, the rule of thumb is that anything that is non-chewable, that's unflavored, that's bitter tasting, that's not going to go into your mouth, the fi anius daiti, even though there are poskim that are machmir, based on the svara called achshavei. Achshavei means that by virtue of ingesting these medicines, you're sort of giving them status. You're elevating them. You're conferring upon them a certain chashivos. And therefore, there are those who are machmir. But as I said, I don't see any need for this kind of chumrah whatsoever. It seems to me that most of these items, there's no svara of achshavei. I'm talking about now even a list of, I had a Rebbe who felt there's no need even to go ahead and get a new tube of toothpaste. Totally unnecessary. It was a famous pasuk. I don't want to mention his name because now I see you raise your eyebrows. So anyway, so it's clear that he contended the following. You simply have to go ahead and cut off the top layer and then go on your merry way. Maybe you could use a new toothbrush but he felt mikra din, it's not necessary. And again, we're talking about toothpaste is not a food item. I don't think people, even the toothpaste that have all kinds of flavoring to them, and they're multicolored, multi-hued, and look very exciting. And I don't necessarily assume that all these flavorings, again, it doesn't affect, obviously, no one's going to really eat toothpaste. There are those who are machmir to have a separate, make sure they get a new toothpaste too for Pesach, and new toothbrushes, etc. But now you can go on to all the other items that I mentioned, all types of soaps that people, and shampoos, and hand creams, and lotions, and deodorants and fresheners, and I have a whole list over here that I put down for myself, and shoe polish and the like, and different types of all these household items, whether it's conditioners and I don't know, the tub cleaners and what they call them, furniture polish and other protectors. There's a long list. They're absolutely permissible without any without any histagriyot whatsoever. There's no issue whatsoever in terms of chametz with any of these items. And this applies, as I said, across the board, whether it's nail polish or nail removers or all these ointments and all these oven cleaners and all these scouring pads and skin creams and I'm trying to think, suntan lotions and what have you, talcum powder and all these sprays and what have you. I don't see any issue whatsoever. Then nifsu me'achilas kelev, then mutar legamri. I don't see an issue b'chlal with any of these. So again, as I said, as long as they're talking about an item that's not going to be ingested. And it's interesting that chutzaretz, or Rob just told me today, from chutzaretz that there's a problem with even sometimes disposable commodities. What's the issue? He told me plastic goods in chutzaretz. And even he told me paper towels in chutzaretz. There's an issue of what? He told me that there often is a kidneys or starch that's added to it. So he asked me, what about Eretz Yisrael? So I said, halabai, we should come to that madrega that we have such products. We're not at that level, and I don't see that problem is an issue, is a reality over here in our lives. And so I just more or less, in terms of overview regarding different food items, this is what I think is significant and important that we should be cognizant of and aware of. Now I want to turn to the second area, which is the area of kidneys. And I'll try again to do this in a very, hopefully, concise and abbreviated form. There is a strict minhag in Ashkenazi communities, which has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. It goes back to the days, actually, of the Gaonim. It goes way, way back. Not to eat all these corn products or bean products or legumes and the like. It's called nidias. It's not mentioned in the Gemara, not mentioned in the Talmud. And it's unclear exactly when this custom actually began. Some say it began in the time of the Rishonim. I'm talking about in the year 1000, a little bit after that. So we're talking about a minhag that's really in terms of historically, it certainly goes way back. And perhaps it goes back, as I said, even to the period of the Gaonim, which is the post-Talmudic period. And the reason why I mention this is because such a practice, which is what exactly it is, means it includes all types of edible seeds that come from peas and beans and lentils. I mentioned legumes. And I'll just give you a list that I found in the Sifri HaPoskim. Just I jotted down the list myself. Beans, bean sprouts. The Mishnah Berurah actually mentions buckwheat. Chickpeas, otherwise known as arbis. Corn. Now, the question someone asked me about garlic. So the practice also is to include garlic in kidneys, green beans, mustard, peas, peanuts. I, by the way, grew up on peanut oil. You may find that you probably raise your eyebrows. But my mother, Hashem, she was a very devout, pious woman. She used peanut oil. Today, it's unheard of. No one would have even a havamina. You probably would be more or less tarred and feathered, run out of the Jewish community if you were to go ahead and decide to use peanut oil. But potatoes, there were those who are machmir on the use of potatoes. And I mentioned the other night that the Chayonim actually at one point wanted to ask you because he was afraid you might take potatoes and turn it into flour. And people once again confused this flour with some other flour from the five minim. And so he said it should be also. So they called his sefer not Chayei Adam, but Mitat Adam. He's trying to kill us. What else did he eat on Pesach? There's not much left. That would be permissible. But all these things and soybeans and sesame and sunflower seeds. And so the question, of course, that comes up is the kidney derivatives, the oils that are derived from kidneys. So here again, you have many, many different positions that are out there in terms of the Gdolei HaPoskim, what they speak about. I'll just mention the most probably the one that's the subject of more discussion than anything else. And that is what's known as rapeseed oil or canola oil, which is very, very famous. And the late last number of years, there's a tendency to essentially to asser rapeseed oil and to asser canola oil. I personally feel it's mutter. I personally feel it's permissible. I don't really understand the chumrah that's involved over here. I could discuss it with you, but that would take another 2 hours, and I'm not going to. I'm just indicating that years ago, there was some very large kashrus organization in the United States that gave a hashgacha on canola oil. And then over the years, what's called the kidney shenishtanu, that they actually underwent all kinds of, all types of changes that occurred. So I personally have no difficulty, I'm being very honest and very open, with the use of canola oil. I'm not talking about cottonseed oil. Cottonseed oil, as you probably may or may not be aware, this is a big machlokes haposkim, American poskim, or the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is one minhag, and minhag chutz laaretz is another minhag. Cottonseed oil is definitely permissible, no question about it. And some hold it's shemen kidneys as well. Again, as I said, the chumras have become extended considerably. I think most probably have the practice of not using canola oil. The question is the alternative, palm oil. Against, I was referring to them. They're the ones who gave the hashgacha on it. I heard from Rabbi Ganak. Rabbi Ganak told me that the reason why they decided to now ask it is because they want to be on board with all the other hashgachas. That's the main reason. But Mikra Adin, I don't think it's a asr al pi halacha. I don't really fully grasp. I can read for you a number of very strong statements about it, but I'm not going to. I'm just indicating that probably the one item that seems to be the subject of enormous amount of machlokes. But all the other elements, as I said, there today you have all types of what's called synthetic food derivatives. It's called kidney shenishtanu. It means when they underwent some sort of a change. We're talking about they were transformed. It means it's converted food grade ingredients that are derived from kidneys. That's what you have. And there's so many, especially in modern science and modern technology, you have many different types of synthetically produced ingredients that have multiple applications in the food industry that are utilized extensively, no question about it. And I'm talking, let's say, about aspartame, all these artificial sweeteners that are all over the place. Anyone looks into any of these drinks, you'll see them everywhere. And as well as many, many other items. And the question is whether, what's the status of kidney or shenishtanu? And this, as I said, the subject of a big machlokes among Dolei HaPoskim. Some machmir in Eretz Yisrael, there's certainly more of a inclination to machmir regarding all these areas. Because in general, the issue of kidneys, I mean, what's the reasoning for kidneys? Number one, kidneys are very similar to grain kernels that can be converted into flour. And number two, also that you have actually sometimes, and we'll discuss this in a moment, that with reference to kidneys, there are many similarities between kidneys and other chumistika products. And therefore, their chazal were very, when it came to Pesach, there's something called chumah de fiska. And now this will bring me into the issue of quinoa. I personally feel quinoa is permissible, lagamri, lachatrila, without any issue whatsoever. What is quinoa? So quinoa actually is, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's become very popular the last 15, 20 years, I would say, approximately, because it's considered to be a very healthy, it's a substitute for wheat products, for grain products, and it actually comes from South America. That's where the urge, that's where it's raised in the regions of the Andes Mountains, and it's known for its edible seeds. And the question is, what's the halachic status of kidneys? And many feel that quinoa is kidneys. It's considered to be kidneys of the halacha, and therefore they are machmir. I heard this from Hagoyin of Shlomo Miller Shlita from Toronto. He told this to me many years ago. He's machmir on quinoa. I also heard in the name of, I didn't hear from him directly, but I heard his name. I'm going to have a cell Belsky as that's how was also machmir related to quinoa, but there are many poskim who are makel regarding quinoa as well. And it's not a true grain crop, it's a kind of, I guess I call it a pseudo cereal, because to a large extent it's from what's called the goosefoot family. I think that's the family of beets and spinach, they belong to that family, and therefore it's not a legume, it's not really botanically related to legumes, not related to peas, to beans, to that. And therefore, and it wasn't around when the original Xerio of Kidneys was established. And therefore, that which was not existing then. So the question is, can we go ahead and be Mechadish? And those are the arguments for permitting quinoa, namely because it can be compared to potatoes. It can be compared to other plants that also resemble kidneys, but are not included because their existence was unknown when this ordinance was actually put into place. And that's why there are poskim who feel that it's sufficiently far enough from what's considered to be kidneys, and therefore they feel there's a makom to be meko regarding kidneys. Kidneys has become very popular in the United States, that I can tell you. In many, many areas of the United States, in many communities, kidneys was used, and there are many rabbanim who are behind it. But again, there are those who are machmir. I'm not telling you what to do. You have to decide again on your own. I did tell many people the following, and this is what I think should be done. Often the problem with quinoa is that it grows near wheat fields. So I think it has to be examined. has to be examined carefully. That's what I've told people in the last 10 years, to examine it to see that no kernels there, and you can examine it. It's not so difficult. I've done it myself. And once you do that examination, I don't think you have an issue as far as the kin was concerned. It's a very small, and how shall I describe it? A disc-shaped kind of kernel. And there's like you have a germ band that encircles the periphery of the seed. And when you cook it, this germ band separates from the seed into little spirals. It has a very unique appearance, a unique kind of texture. I get a kick out of these things, that's why I study them. Anyway, so the I think that if those of you want to be machmer, of course, there's always a basis to be machmer, chum de pisla, if such a concept exists. But mikra din, it seems to me, there's no basis for this kind of chumah. So let me just perhaps summarize what I said till now in terms of, let's say, medicines and cosmetics of Pesach. So again, the main concern you have to have really is it nifsal me'achilas kelev or not? Did it lose its chametzika form, essentially? And as I told you, I think that achshave, this principle of elevating it, giving it status, concerning upon it, hashiva supplies only to something which a person is going to put into their mouth. But otherwise, I don't think that achshave has any relevance, neither to medication or to drugs. And often you can't find parallel drugs on the Ashgacha. By the way, here in SSL, one of the items that needs really a lot more attention, and Chutzar is there a lot more, quote-unquote, parallel kosher on the Hashgacha drugs than there are here in SSL. I'm not sure why that's the case, but that's what I've seen over the years. And in general, as I said, as far as denatured alcohol, what I mentioned earlier, so there is possibility, Ramosha Feinstein, Zatzal alludes to it, it can be restored, but only in products which are in a pure liquid state. Because he's talking about people on the Bowery who are busy somehow drinking cologne and drinking hand lotions and hairspray, shaving lotions, apparently because they had some alcohol content. But I don't think that is, I was told by a pharmacist told us to be, he said anyone who did that would be, Achman al-Assad, would be poisoning himself. And he doesn't see that that's something which is possible. So again, I think all these items is a makom lahakel. And as far as kidneys are concerned, so the machlokes regarding kidneys and ishtanu, and I'm not here giving you a position. Again, my own position is clear. What I said earlier, namely as far as the particular item which seems to be the most problematic, I don't think it's problematic at all. I don't understand the entire issue with canola oil and rapeseed oil. But again, there are those who are very machmir regarding these particular matters. And therefore, there's certainly, I do understand if someone wants to be machmir, certainly there's a makom lahachmir. I actually have a number of studies right in front of me on this, on the issue of kinwa. So I'm not going to share it with you because it would, it's more of a scientific halachic analysis of kinwa. But again, and talking about when I speak of kidneys, I mean, there's quite a lengthy list of items that are included in kidneys. Besides the regular items, again, if you think of it, it's just amazing, whether it's bean sprouts, whether it's, they have what they call, we use it actually on the Siman Rosh Hashanah, black-eyed peas. And you also see this in, I mentioned chickpeas, I mentioned corn, I mentioned, you have all these different types of, this is actually an issue which is discussed also, the issue of lecithin. That's another, a long discussion. I'm not going to go into it, but again, all of mustard, and someone asked me today about popcorn, for sure, that's in the, together of kidney. So all these poppy seeds, all these sesame seeds, all these saffron things, all these soy oil and soybeans and, I don't know, stabilizers and string beans and sunflower seeds and tofu. I mean, I got a long list of people who've been talking to me about these items. But again, what's not included? Tea is not included in kidney. Someone asked me about tea. Someone asked me about coffee, which I mentioned earlier, should be kosher Pesach and the like. And again, certainly not potatoes. It's very interesting. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein Zatzal has a tshuva where he writes, a person who has a custom to refrain from eating peanuts, he should adhere to that custom. But if he doesn't have such a custom, he doesn't have to. Could you imagine? Bizmanenu Anu, in our day and age, someone eating peanuts on Pesach. I think I mentioned the story already last year of the two Rosh Yeshiva from the Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai who told me that they had nothing to eat. They were starving. And so they, on Pesach, decided they're going to eat peanuts. And they ate peanuts. And the Japanese custodian came over to them and said, Hametz, Hametz. Tells these two Rosh Yeshiva that you're eating chametz. So again, as I said, we've become more machmir over the years. And again, Chumrat HaPisra is, again, a good thing. I'm just, again, pointing out that there are differences of opinion regarding Kiddush and Ishtanu, especially when it comes to Daya Soda. That's really where many people, it's made from aspartame. Aspartame is this sweet kind of enzyme that grows out of derivative of Kiddush. And those who have Mako on such a product here, that's the issue I was referring to earlier, to Coca-Cola. That's the major issue in the Coca-Cola Ashkocha. It's taken off on Pesach. It's under one Ashkocha the entire year, and they remove it on Pesach. And then Rav Landau, Shlita from Bnei Brak, takes it over. So that's what goes on here on a yearly basis. And he again, the question is whether you can certify diet soda uses aspartame. It's also a subject of a lot of discussion. But again, I want to just repeat what I said earlier. Kidneys can be fed, can be given to children. Children have no problem eating kidneys, including baby formula that contains kidneys, as long as there's a need for it. And there's no maximum age, as far as I'm concerned. Some say it's proper to keep separate dishes for kidneys foods and wash the dishes in a separate sink. The truth is, Mika, it's not necessary. Kidneys are not also banor. There's a minute not to eat kidneys. And people told me that someone actually in this shul told me he's being evaluated by a Sephardi. So I said, Baruch Hashem, that Sephardim and Ashkenazim in this shul can still speak to each other. It's great. Outstanding. Maybe Mashiach might come. And of course, what's going to happen? So they know, the Sephardi family, not to cook kidneys for him, because he's an Ashkenazi, and they're going to be respectful of his sensibilities. But it happened in the past, he told me, that they actually cooked kidneys in a pot, and they didn't know what to do. And I have to kasha the pot, chas v'sholom. No need to kasha the pot. Kidneys are not also banot. It's a minhag of Ashkenazim not to eat it. And a person who's sick, actually, God forbid, even if he's not in danger, can actually eat kidneys on Pesach. So you'd be able to take a pill that has kidneys. And even if you're in the Shas HaTzchak and somehow you had to eat kidneys, even Ashkenazi can eat kidneys. I'm just trying to show you that there are clearly limitations, and there also are halachas that one has to be relevant. Someone asked me today that a woman from a Sephardi background, and she married an Ashkenazi. Now the question is, which minhag should prevail? And so she asked me, so I told her I'd prefer not to get involved in this matter because there are chilul deyos. If you speak to Rav Avadia Yosef Zatzal, you get one opinion. Speak to an Ashkenazi Gadol, you get another opinion. So you will decide by asking your Rav what you should do in terms of minhagim in general. I personally happen to be of the opinion that, let's say, a Sephardi woman wants to hold on to certain minhagim. I don't think we should make a World War III over that. I don't think it's worth it. Shalom Bayis is more important than that, and therefore one has to use a lot of seichel, and when it comes to many of these issues. Okay, more or less, this is an overview of issues related to food products and issues related to kidneys. Now I want to talk about just a bit about Erev Pesach Shechol Yos B'Shabbos, and this could be, again, I don't think it's, I don't know if any of you, perhaps some of you, or all of you, remember, it was about, I think, 13 years ago. That's what my wife, Shlita, reminded me. We've had actually a number of them in our Baruch Hashem, in our marriage. And so there's a big milah of Erev Pesach Shechol Yos B'Shabbos. So they asked me, what's the milah? The milah is you come to the Seder, you can actually come well-rested and relaxed. What's wrong with that? That's a good thing. So maybe we should have more. Of course, I'm not the one who's koveh. I'm determining whether we're going to have them or not. So let's just now, first I'm going to overview it, and then I'm going to discuss a bit more specifically in terms of the Seder Hadron, what should be done. You're allowed to eat chametz until Shabbos morning, and yet we're going to burn the chametz that we searched for on Thursday night, early on Friday morning. The reason why we do that again, because we don't want to have confusion in all the subsequent years when Erev Pesach does not fall out on Shabbos. And yet Kol Chamira, which is nullifying the chametz in our possession, which is normally said when you burn the chametz, it's not said on Friday, but it's said on Shabbos morning. That is amazing. On Shabbos morning, where one is not permitted to have chametz in one's possession, before the end of the fifth hour, that's when you should say it. Again, not all chametz is going to be burned on Friday morning, because we're going to have those who are going to follow the next procedure that I'll mention. Some are going to have challah on Shabbos, two meals on Shabbos morning that we'll discuss momentarily. But so obviously that's not going to be included in the chametz that's going to be burned on Friday. All of the Seder preparation should really take place on Friday. I'm talking about preparing the charoset, preparing the maror, preparing the zroa, the beitzah, I'm talking about the shank bone, the roasted egg, the main melach, the salt water, checking the romaine lettuce. Romaine lettuce, I actually use romaine lettuce, but my wife Shlita uses some maror, what I call the real McCoy, the root, because she wants it in the kaim of pasuk. Pasuk says twice in Tanakh, Allah Hashem biapo, ve'esh mi pips tochel, gecholim bar v'meno. Smoke coming out of the nostrils. I'm just being a little cute. Anyway, so the she can handle it. So, but I use romaine lettuce, but I check it very, very carefully. I don't use the leaves. I only use the stalks. This way I avoid any problem of insects, etc. It's very hard to check completely and thoroughly and carefully. But still, all this should be done on Friday because you're not allowed to go ahead and prepare for the next day on Shabbos. It's an issue of hachana. And they even poskim would talk about napping on Shabbos. Is that considered to be a hachana? Is that called a hachana, actually? Because you want to remain alert for the Seder. You want to be up and awake. But it's not considered to be a problem. Anyway, so the Vilna Gaon actually held that the horseradish should be grated before the Seder, so it will be sharp. Others say no. Others say it should be grated before Shabbos. You store it in a sealed jar. You try to hold on to whatever sharpness you possibly can. And if you forget to prepare before Shabbos, you have to grate it on Yom Tov. So again, you do it with a shinui. Exactly what the shinui is, you would have to, let's say, grate it on a paper towel, or you turn the grater upside down. You find some sort of machinery that will permit you to go ahead and grate the horseradish. And again, romaine lettuce, the issue is infestation. But again, I'm suggesting you use the stalks and not the leaves itself. But there are people who use the leaves, so then you have to check for infestation. No question about it. You should check it actually before Shabbos, because again, you have to do it slowly. All the checking when it comes to insects should be done, not in a rush kind of way, but in a slow and thoroughly done process. And you have to drain or dry the lettuce well, because again, water might accumulate in the storage container, and that's another issue. Let's say I have lettuce that soaks in water for 24 hours, you have a din kavu sharia kibabushal. Once something is pickled, it may have a din of mavushal, and you cannot use maror mavushal. Maror that's cooked cannot be used actually for the purpose of maror. Now, if you didn't prepare salt water in advance, so you can make it actually on Yom Tov. Some recommend again using a shinui. What you do is you'll put the water in the kli before the salt, before you put the melach there. If chavrosis has to be prepared before the seder, again, the fruit can be grated on Yom Tov, but the nuts should be prepared with a shinui. You crush it in a bag. Again, the wine can be added without a problem. That's not an issue. Again, there's another issue that I didn't, I just reminded myself of. That is the issue of when you're the shank bone and the egg roasted on Yom Tov. So if you roast it on Yom Tov, it has to be eaten on that day of Yom Tov. And we don't eat roasted meat or chicken at the Seder, Kayadua, Tzli. So the shank bone or egg that was prepared, Matzah Shabbos, will be eaten again on, you're going to eat it on Sunday in Yom Tov. In general, most people, I imagine, Kimat, every one of us will prepare already kosher Pesach foods. We're going to eat our Pesach dishes. The only exception being, I'll get to in a few moments, assuming that we're going to have two meals, one meal on Friday night, let's say you'll have challah, and let's say two meals on Shabbos morning, which is normally not the case. Normally, Shalshur is eating after Mincha in the afternoon. So there are those who are very machmir about that. What they'll do is they'll have two meals in the morning. This is what my minig is. All the years that Erev Pesach fell on Shabbos is have two bread meals in the morning. We're extremely careful regarding the bread. My wife is on patrol, and it's almost, I would say, Shabbat at work to make sure that, God forbid, not a crumb, not a morsel of bread will fall anywhere. It's each one is given a prepared amount. It's actually measured, and it's in two or three vessels, and everything is done under her protective eye. And therefore, there's no possibility of anything going awry. And in the afternoon, if you're machmir to make sure you want to have shalshus in the afternoon, so you'll have some meat, some potatoes, some fish, whatever you plan on having. That's also according to the third day in Shulchan Aruch. Now, the Chatzilah wants you to always have bread for shalshus as well. Second day says you can have chametz saminim, which we're not going to have because of chametz. And the third opinion says you can have actually fruit and the like. And then there's even a fourth opinion, not quoted in Shulchan Aruch, namely, say a shtickle Torah. Say that's a nice Dvar Torah. So make sure it's an authentic Dvar Torah. I'm just actually half joking. But these are the three opinions that are quoted. And that generally, sometimes people don't want to introduce the challah into their kosher Pesach home. So they could use actually egg matzah for Lacha Mishnah. Normally the bracha of egg matzah is Burmi Amazonos. But Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in English Mishnah, if you're going to use it for a Shabbos meal, so he passes the halacha, the bracha is amotzi. You have to eat at least a kibetza, which is about a bit more than 2 ounces of egg matzah, in addition to all the other foods that are going to be served at the meal, to substantiate the meal and justify that motzi. But again, you can only eat the egg matzah during the time frame the chametz can be consumed. This means only in the morning hours, and that's it. Then afterwards, you're not allowed to. The same, by the way, people often ask me about kidneys. Till when can I eat kidneys? And the answer is till when you're allowed to go ahead and have chametz, which is, again, till the fourth hour. And after that, you should not eat kidneys. That's the meaning of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so here, those are just, by way of overview, some of the issues regarding Erev Pesach, Shechol Yos B'Shabbos. I want to mention also one or two other things. Someone asked me today, actually, they asked me about how do you go about and check or clean romaine lettuce. So I told them that romaine lettuce, usually, because it's a open leaf variety of lettuce, and it only closes at the end of the growth cycle, it closes around the stalk area. That's what happens. I actually studied that as well in one of my classes many, many years ago. So it's very prone to infestation, romaine lettuce. And the insects most commonly found are small and black or green, they're very camouflaged into the romaine lettuce. I myself have seen such insects in the past, and usually they're found between the innermost leaf of the infested head. And now the question is, how do you go about doing it? If you're going to use the romaine leaves themselves, you have to wash each leaf individually with great care. And so the way to do it is the following. You simply cut off the base, you separate the leaves one from the other, and then you're going to soak them in a solution of cold water. Some people even use soap, which I think is a good idea. And then you're going to, shall we say, go ahead now and, I think the term they use is agitate the leaves in this solution. And you're going to obviously move them about, and you spread each leaf, you try to expose all of its, I don't know if you ever saw a romaine lettuce leaf, its curls, its crevices, all kinds of things are there. And then you're going to use a heavy stream of water. You have to remove all foreign matter and the soap, of course, as well. People have what they call, maybe you're familiar with it, I'm not so familiar with it, I've used the leaf, vegetable brushes. They have vegetable brushes that they use to on both sides of the leaf. And you people check them over a light box. They check them against the strong overhead lighting. And they pay careful attention to the folds and crevices where the insects have been known. They're holding on for dear life, if I can use such an expression, through several washings. And so occasionally you may even find a worm in burrows within the body of the leaf. And so again, you have to really be careful. If you're going to use the leaf, I suggest always using the stalks and not using the leaves. I think that's the best option if you're not going to use maror. So that's what you should do in terms of the romaine lettuce. I didn't mention someone that spoke to me about it today about the gebrox issue. So I'm not a chassid. I don't think you would accuse me of being a chassid by any means. Anyway, so once matzah is baked, we assume it can only become chametz and you're allowed to go ahead, and now once it's baked, you can eat it with any liquid, you can grind it with any liquid, but there are, especially Hasidic communities, they adopted a chumrah not to consume matzah that was contact with liquid, even if it was baked, and it's called gebrox. But they're worried about that sometimes, and sometimes there is a basis for this, that the flour in the matzah was not sufficiently baked properly. And as a result, once it comes in contact with water, so the leavening process, the process of fermentation of the chibas will be rejuvenated, but once again, be revived, resuscitated, when the matzah comes to contact with water. So they're very machmir in the course of the chag. And some, again, there are different minhagim that I see that exist. And even those who abstain from gebrox, usually, if I'm not mistaken, by the time Achon Chapesa comes around, they already are mekel regarding the issue of gebrox. Okay, I just wanted to, I could actually now, if you wish, but it's up to you, go into great detail. I don't think it's really necessary. On Erev Pesach, Shechol Yos B'Shabbos. There's a lot of detail. Maybe I'll just mention perhaps a few small items that are some detail in some of this area of Erev Pesach, Shechol Yos B'Shabbos. I'll just, perhaps just several items. On Erev Pesach, normally you're not allowed to eat anything which you're going to use in Leil HaSeder, namely matzah. There's a famous Yerushalmi, and that Easter applies the entire day of Erev Pesach. Now the question is, what about this year? Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, so now can you eat matzah on Friday? So again, that there are those who feel that you should abstain, except in necessity, but many poskim probably hold it's permissible. There's no Easter. Eating matzah at Easter is only dafka Erev Pesach. And now when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, we're talking about matzah made of flour and water. Again, you're allowed to use egg matzah, as I said earlier, till the end of the fourth hour. That's permissible. That's mentioned here in Shulchan Aruch. There is a another second issue, which also, as I said, when you're having the three meals, and the first two meals include bread, the third meal, the chatchila, should also include bread. That's why people have it in the morning. That's the practice to have it in the morning. But again, there's a mitzvah as well to eat hot food on Shabbos. That's the minhag of eating cholent, or hamim, by svadim. So that in practice, which takes place, normally those foods contain chametz. Every cholent that I have, I was once in the house of someone in the United States for Shabbos, and so the cholent contained bananas, which I never encountered in my entire life. What a cholent. And then I'm not exactly so, I'm fond, I could eat bananas, but not bananas in the cholent. Somehow it doesn't appeal to me. So the hostess, a wonderful person, so after she gave me one heaping plate and I had it, then she said to me, ah, it's good, it's clear that you like it. I'll give you another heaping plate. So they say that Shabbos lo'odik nitna v'lo tzar. But since I don't want to be mitzar her, so I ate two plates. Then she asked me for a third one. I said, well, all right. Anyway, but there's a mitzvah to eat hot food on Shabbos. And usually those foods contain cholent, chametz, et cetera, but that's awesome. And therefore, one has to be careful regarding that matter. Obviously, all the kasher is going to be taken case before Shabbos. You're not going to cook dishes that have, I don't know, flour, noodles, barley, any of the above, obviously, clearly. And so therefore, one has to be cognizant of that. And that's generally what people do relating to this issue. I want to mention, again, a few more items, if I may. That I spoke about roasting the zroah, the shankman, before Shabbos. Again, l'chatchila, because it shouldn't be roasted on the Seder night, because the dinners are really on Yom Tov. You're only supposed to roast food that's going to be eaten on that day of Yom Tov. And the minhag is not to eat roasted meat on the night of the Seder. That's a very strong minhag, and therefore the roasting is not for the purpose of Yom Tov. If you forgot to roast it before Shabbos, and then you're going to roast it on Motzei Shabbos. You intend to eat it on Yom Tov the next day, unquestionably. And even though the egg may be either roasted or cooked, the minhag is to roast it as well. We roast both the egg and the shank bone. That's the minhag that's mentioned by the poskim. And again, if you forgot to roast it before Shabbos, you can do it on Motzei Shabbos. Again, you expect to eat it at the Seder. So that's another example of something that's really, all these preparations should ideally be before Shabbos. That would be the ideal in terms of that. Okay, just one or two more items that I want to mention. That is that when one eats a suda on Friday night, so again, so every Shabbos we have a suda, and you have to make a motzi on Lechem Mishneh, and you have to eat minimally a little bit more than the volume of a kibetza, of the volume of an egg of bread, whatever. Some poskim say egg matzah. And again, you have to make sure here, in terms of the chametz and the like, that you're on top of things that you have a pesach table and pesach kelim. So again, you have to be extremely careful. You did all the kasher, you worked so hard. You want to make sure that nothing is going to be, Rachman Litzlan, is going to be undone. Someone told me that, and this is what I think many, many people do, from what I understood, that after they complete the meal before the fifth hour, so what they do is they're going to shake out the tablecloth and perhaps there may be some crumbs, and they're going to flush it down the toilet. I think that's the most popular practice that I have seen in terms of this issue of Erev Pesach, Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. And again, we're talking about it with small pieces of bread. We're not discussing large pieces of bread, but they should be flushed down the toilet. Again, the large piece, you can crumble it. You crumble the large piece of bread, you make it into a smaller piece, and then you flush it down the toilet. And then people also want to go ahead and after eating chametz before the fifth hour, so they're going to rinse their mouth to make sure they remove any remaining chametz, and even use where they have all kinds of pre-cut dental floss in order to make sure that you want to dislodge whatever particles of chametz are caught between your teeth. And again, as I said, you're allowed to use mouthwash. L'fiyani is daiti. I don't see an issue with using mouthwash in that respect, in that circumstance. These are some of the elements of Erev Pesach, Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. I should mention also that, as I said, if you are makbid dafka to eat Shal Shiris in the afternoon, so then you can fulfill the mitzvah of Surah Shlishis, as I said, by eating meat and fish and the like. And so that is what some people do. But those who want to do almost the ideal, the family is likely, they have both two meals in the morning and in the afternoon, they'll have that as well in order to fulfill that that position of those who contend that you have to have Shal Shiris in the afternoon after you daven mincha. Someone asked me about chicken that they can use on the Seder night. So as I mentioned, Bizman HaMikdash, only Basat Tzli, that was the meat of the Korban Pesach. Only meat that was roasted was eaten actually in the Beis HaMikdash. Nowadays, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a Korban Pesach, but we don't need roasted meat on the Seder night. Now the question, they started up with me, what is called meat? What about roasted fish? Yes, mate. Roasted fish is not a problem. It's permissible. It means roasted means any kind of roasting, including pot roast. That's always a favorite question. What's the status of pot roast? Pot roast refers to meat, a chicken that's roasted in a pot or pan in its own juice. You don't add anything from outside. You don't add any water. You don't add any of the liquid. And even if the item was cooked first and then roasted, that's also not permissible. But if it was roasted then cooked, the poskim say it is permissible. They asked me about what's the status of something that is fried, something that's barbecued, something that's broiled, something that's smoked. But the idea is that all that is roasted. I think it's all considered being together at Sli. I think it's awesome. I don't think you're allowed to do any of that. Again, they asked me, can I have broiled liver on Leil HaSeder? Certainly not. And the question is, what's the status of deep fried? They asked me. One person is just on this case. Deep fried, I think, is considered like cooking. Would probably be permissible. But again, as I said, these are very strong minhagim that Klal Yisrael have that one should be cognizant of in terms of Leil HaSeder and the like. Someone asked me, a woman asked me this question, whether she can drink actually water or soda between Kos Rishon and Kos Sheni. There's a first and second cup on Leil HaSeder because the bracha on water is Shahakal. And unless the water was on the table during Kiddush or intended during Kiddush to drink water or soda, you're going to have to make a bracha on that water, unless the water was there. The water was present, you had it in mind. And also, they asked me about drinking coffee or drinking, tea or all these pure fruit juices. To go ahead and drink them, again, between the first and second course, again, only if they won't require their own bracha. In order to be covered by the Hagefen that's recited over the course of Kiddush, you have to have been on the table during Kiddush, or you have to have in mind to drink them while you're reciting Kiddush. You have to have it in your head, in Kavona, and since they continue to be Chaman Medina, so then adding a separate bracha, drinking them, would make it appear as if you're adding a kos to the four kosas, which is the issue of Baltosim. Now I'd like to add to the four kosas of the Seder, Chazal Vesak and four kosas. And again, one should avoid, of course, drinking wine or any other intoxicating beverage between the drinking of the first two kosas. You are allowed to drink wine and all of the beverages after the second kos is drunk and throughout the Shulchan Aruch. When the meal is served, then you're allowed to go ahead and drink. But in general, you should try to avoid this, and you should obviously, with the exception of the Shulchan Aruch, you should focus on the Seder, and that should be our major, the major avoda. And Leil HaSeder, of course, is really to be Mesabri, it's Yes Mitzrayim. And all of us are obligated in the midst of Sibu, it's Yes Mitzrayim, which means that enjoying our children and grandchildren and all those who are present and trying to create a atmosphere, which is Meromam. The whole idea of Leil HaSeder is to create an elevated and very inspiring kind of atmosphere. It should be an atmosphere where one feels the Kedusha of Pesach, one feels the Kedusha of Leil HaSeder, one feels the connection to Hashem Yisbarach, one feels the profound Akar Satov that all of us owe to Hashem, each one individually and collectively for all that he's done for us. And that should be essentially the focus of our attention on Leil HaSeder and Halavai. All of us should be zochet to a Chag Kosher Sameach. Halavai, we should be able to somehow rid ourselves of all these plastics, and somehow the pandemic should, Halavai, Yachlofe Avram Min HaOlam, it should pass from this world, and we should, Baruch Hashem, be able to enjoy each other's company, enjoy our families, and halavai, there should be benisa nigalu, benisa nasinu nigal.
Mentioning canola oil and quinoa and all those things, but you can't really find them with a good texture.
That's the problem.
Yeah. You need a good